KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live on Lincoln Way and 3rd Avenue in the Inner Sunset.
The Richmond District.
I'm from the Fillmore in the Western District.
It's technically the Castro.
Twin Peaks.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I'm from Georgia.
Coming up, a Mexican immigrant is forced to leave his home at age 17 because of who he loved.
When we get back home, he started like yelling in the street that he loved me, and we started kissing, and then his dad saw us.
And getting caught meant real danger.
When we get there, he pulled up a gun and they put me on my knees and they told me that I have to move or they're going to kill me.
It's the story of an LGBTQ immigrant who went from Mexico to the Castro.
When I get there, I was like go-go dancers and drag queens and stuff. I was like, oh my God.
That's coming up on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Some are harassed, some are tortured, and some are even killed. LGBTQ immigrants flee from their home countries and leave everything behind in order to be, well, who they are. In the past decade, over 1,800 trans and gender diverse people have been reported murdered in Latin America. Probably hundreds more were never reported. The lucky ones who make it to the United States often have a rough start, especially with the Trump administration's increasing asylum restrictions. In recent news, asylum seekers who pass through another country first will be ineligible for asylum at the U.S. southern border. Many people stay under the radar. And for 10 years, Hector Romero was living as an undocumented immigrant. This is the first time he's sharing his story publicly. KALW's Sarah Nora Coast shares his story.
San Mateo, California, your destination will be on your right.
I arrive in San Mateo late afternoon. About 300 feet away, I see a man wearing a black and white checkered jacket, shiny sneakers, and hair neatly brushed to the side. I assume that he's the man I'm here to meet, Hector Romero, but I just call him Hector.
Hey Hector.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
Sorry, I'm just already recording.
Is
that fine with you?
Oh, definitely.
Good.
So this is the living room, and the kitchen is around there.
In Hector's home, there is an enormous painting with a pink water lily, placemats with skulls, and a guitar hanging on the wall. But what's most striking to me is the amount of religious porcelain figures. The biggest one is Virgin Mary, or Guadalupe in Spanish.
Since I grew up, I've been always like praying to God. I think Mexican has like a lot of faith on God, but the faith for Virgin Guadalupe is even stronger because we feel it's like our mother. Everything I've been through, I always ask her for help, and I feel like she's always helping us.
Hector grew up in a city called Ciudad López Mateos, a little north of Mexico City. Music was always playing from the speakers in his home. His dad was a well-known DJ, a so-called sonido. His sister and aunt also owned a little salsa club together, where Hector would go to dance from the age of 9.
It was party after party, another party, because my daddy was a DJ, so he was really happy growing up there.
Hector was a popular guy with lots of friends, but there was one guy in particular that Hector had his eyes on. He lived just 2 doors away, and it turned out to be mutual.
So we started like, you know, like little kisses and stuff like that, and we grew up and we started like dating, hiding.
They had to pretend they were just friends.
We couldn't date because in Mexico, nobody knew about us, and it was really hard at that time to be gay.
They managed to keep their relationship a secret for a while. But then one night, they went to a party together.
And he get drunk. So when we get back home, he started like yelling in the street that he loved me and he want to kiss me and stuff. And we start kissing, and then his dad saw us from the window.
His boyfriend's father was the mayor of the city.
So that was the start of my worst nightmare ever. As he was the mayor, he was in charge of the police too. So I couldn't go to the police.
Instead, the police came to him. And for over a month, they followed Hector everywhere he went. To school, around his neighborhood.
In the corner, or if I go to buy some tortillas or something, and they follow me. So it was really scary.
And then, one night.
I think it was Friday night. because I was already dressed up to go to a DJ dance with my friends, and I saw the police coming, and they told me to get into the car.
The policemen drove out of the city and up towards the mountains.
And they, I got scared, so scared to talk about that because it's like reminding. But it's like, when we get there, he pulled up a gun and they take me out from the car. And they put me on my knees and they told me with a gun on my head that I have to move or they're going to kill me. And he said, if I don't go, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill my whole family.
And then they said,
if you like to get that on your butt, we're going to give it to you and we're going to rape you. So I was really scared that they're going to do something to me. And I know they can do that because they have the power. They do whatever they want.
This was it. Hector knew he had to disappear, just 17 years old. He told his family that he was in danger but made up a story why. He couldn't tell them he was gay. Even though they were loving parents, they were still traditional.
It was really sad. It was sad because I knew I have to leave everything behind.
His sister and aunt made plans with the Coyote, a smuggler who helps people without legal papers to cross the U.S. border. But first, Hector had to take an airplane from Mexico City to Tijuana. During the four-hour flight, all he could think was,
that was the last time I'm going to see my family and my friends, so it was really, really hard.
In Tijuana, the Coyote took Hector and two Mexican women across the border in the trunk of a car.
They put us like a sardines, like one next to the other.
All through the drive, Hector was praying not to get caught at one of the checkpoints. But then,
they opened the trunk, they told us, oh, okay, welcome to America. They say, bienvenidos a America.
Hector found himself in a garage in San Diego where he was forced to stay for a few days until his sister Karina picked him up. She was already living in San Mateo in Northern California. Even though Hector felt safe for the first time in months, the beginning of his new life in the US was extremely rough. He decided not to call his friends or family in Mexico.
For a whole year. That was the worst thing ever.
He didn't want to put them in danger.
It was really hard because I was by myself and I started like crying. I was crying for like 3-4 months straight. I couldn't stop and because I couldn't call my mom and tell her how I was feeling.
But then things started to get better. The police stopped threatening his family in Mexico. He began to learn English and he was introduced to the gay scene in the Bay Area.
I see people holding hands and I was like, wow, this is, I wouldn't even dream to do this in my country. I could never do that. This is something good after the bad.
Hector was completely overwhelmed by the open-mindedness.
Being gay is being like, here is being like, just being normal. It's like, just like regular person.
One night, Hector went with Karina to her friend Mimo's party in Sunnyvale. Unlike Hector, Mimo was openly gay.
When I get there, I was like, there was like go-go dancers and everything was like drag queens and stuff. Like, I was like, oh my God.
At that point, Hector never told anyone about his sexuality. Not until Mimo approached him after the party.
So he just tell me right away. He's like, when are you going to tell your sister that you're gay? I'm like, what? Why are you saying this?
Karina overheard the conversation and was totally accepting. In fact, she kind of always knew Hector was into guys. From that day, Hector and Mimo went out together and very quickly Hector had another family in the Bay Area, the Latino LGBTQ community.
Because we are something in common, you know? Like every single story that we hear when we grow up and you're gay, it's like almost the same and you relate to it.
These people accepted him for who he was. Finally, Hector could go out and dance again like he did back in Mexico. But now, he didn't need to hide anything. His good fortune didn't last long. Just 2 years after Hector arrived in the United States, he started to feel sick. His skin suddenly changed color and he lost 150 pounds, so he went to the emergency room.
It was like a movie. The nurse came up and they seated me in a wheelchair and they took me to a bed.
And then the doctor told him,
you know what? Your blood is 100% poison. Your kidneys are not working. You have to get dialysis right now or you're going to die tomorrow.
Hector was diagnosed with a genetic kidney disease. At that time, he was only 19 years old and undocumented. Thankfully, he was able to get some medical service in the Bay Area, including dialysis. Of course, being sick and undocumented is especially complicated. But being undocumented in general is also not easy.
It's scary to be outside, to drive with no license, to not be able to work in places you like because you don't have the papers. Every day is a challenge.
According to conservative estimates from Pew Hispanic Research Center, over 360,000 undocumented individuals live in the Bay Area. More than 10,000 are LGBTQ immigrants. Many of these people don't have access to the necessary information about how to legally gain asylum. This was also the case for Hector. The only thing he heard in the news was how impossible it was.
Like every day they talk about something negative about immigration.
10 years without papers went by, 8 years with dysfunctional kidneys, and eventually the dialysis could no longer help him. At that point, it was a matter of life and death. But becoming a legal citizen to get more medical treatment was a scary step for Hector.
I thought going to ask for asylum, I have to go to immigration and then they're gonna send me back.
But for a friend, Hector discovered he could get legal help for free.
We provide legal immigration services to LGBTQ immigrants.
This is Anna Leipart. She's the co-founder and director of Oasis Legal Services. The nonprofit helps LGBTQ immigrants in the Bay Area with their asylum process. Anna says one of the biggest challenges is the rule referred as the one-year rule. It was passed by Congress in 1996 and signed into law by President Clinton.
We should honor every legal immigrant here working hard to be a good citizen, but we are also a nation of laws.
The rule stipulates that the asylum application needs to be submitted within the first year of the applicant's arrival in the country. But only 17% of Oasis Legal Services clients apply the first year. It takes years for them to overcome their trauma and share their story.
Typically, the large majority of them suffered sexual abuse for their sexual orientation or gender identity as children, usually multiple abusers, usually over the course of years. We're talking about a lifetime of rejection and bullying.
But it doesn't stop there.
A common form of torture for LGBTQ people is to have, you know, after death, broomsticks or cactuses rammed up their anus, you know, just really awful torture.
Caroline Roberts, attorney and executive director of Oasis Legal Services, agrees.
Many of the people who we do initial intakes for have never told anybody the things that happened to them in their home country for fear of rejection, embarrassment, fear of reliving what happened. And so to have to go through the process quite quickly of telling your story for the first time in your life, to having all of the details examined and then having to go before immigration, that can be incredibly challenging.
Luckily, through a so-called psychological evaluation, LGBTQ people can prove they were unable to file sooner and for that reason be eligible for asylum. Caroline was Hector's attorney throughout his asylum process.
His case was assigned to me, and we started working together first on a declaration, which is his kind of the story of his life.
In Hector's case, Caroline felt even more urgency than normal because of his bad condition.
We really had to try to push his case sooner to try to get him legal status so that he could access the necessary medical resources that he needed because he wouldn't have been able to survive without those resources.
Hector and Caroline worked hard on collecting documents, talking with a psychologist, and preparing for the interview. And then the big day came.
I was so excited, but so scared at the same time. Because I was like, I don't want to mess up on something. What about if they ask me for dates and I don't remember the dates?
He was also terrified that he would have to answer personal questions. Like, really personal.
Some of my friends told me that they even ask him what kind of role they are in sex. They have to tell the truth, but it's like, they don't even say that to their closest friends. How are they going to say that to somebody they don't even know?
While it's not always handled with tact and discretion, there's a reason that immigration officials ask such intimate details.
Can't apply for asylum unless you're willing to say, at least publicly to an immigration official, that you're queer or trans.
That's because, according to U.S. law, the asylum seeker must prove they suffered persecution or the fear of persecution because of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group. For a long time, homosexuals couldn't just seek asylum in the United States. Only since 1990 were LGBTQ people eligible for asylum as members of a particular social group. That's when a 40-year-old Cuban man was able to show that he was in danger of persecution by the Cuban government. The case established a legal precedent in 1994 that made sexual orientation a valid reason to claim asylum. Thankfully, Hector didn't have to provide proof of his sexual orientation. The immigration officer turned out to be a nice, elderly woman. She only asked him a few questions about his involvement in the LGBTQ community. And 5 weeks later, Hector got a letter from the immigration office while he was at the hospital.
I didn't have like any good news on those weeks, so when the asylum came, I was like, wow. And that helped me a lot to get better.
Caroline explains why Hector qualified for asylum.
Because he was able to show that he had suffered harm in Mexico because he's gay, that people had hurt him for that reason and threatened his life, and that if he were to return to Mexico now, he would still be in the same danger because of his sexual orientation.
LGBTQ individuals have gotten more rights throughout Latin America in the last decade. In 2010, Argentina became the first country to legalize gay marriage. In Mexico, the Supreme Court issued a ruling in 2015 that made it much easier for same-sex couples to marry. Still, this progress does not reflect the harsh reality of Hector's story or his LGBTQ friends that have more recently fled from Mexico.
Everywhere that we have researched in Mexico, there are still significant parts of the population that are quite homophobic, and because of that, people who are LGBTQ are still very much in danger all around Mexico.
Mexico has one of the highest murder rates of transgender people in the world, and from 2014 to 2016, there were over 200 murders motivated by sexual orientation or gender identity in the country. But the real numbers might be a lot higher, since not all cases are reported or classified as LGBTQ murders.
I don't think people are aware of the situation in Mexico particularly, and in Central America.
Given the amount of trauma Hector has endured, it's hard to say he's fortunate. But the reality is that it would have been a lot more difficult to be granted asylum since the inauguration of Donald Trump.
You know, I look at some of these asylum people, they're gang members.
A report by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service shows that the approval rate of asylum cases in San Francisco has declined from 80% to 41% in just 3 years. And the number of people seeking asylum overall has increased by nearly 2,000% in the last decade. I ask Anna Leiphardt from Oasis Legal Services what's changed over the past few years under Donald Trump.
So do you have 5 hours? The short answer is it has become much more difficult to get asylum. So many roadblocks have come up under the Trump administration. The big one, of course, that you see in the news is asylum seekers being detained at the border.
In a proclamation signed this morning, the president says that nobody caught illegally entering the U.S. will be allowed to claim asylum after the fact. They'll never be citizens.
I mean, I wish the government could look in the faces of the people who are affected by this.
Almost every day, there are threats of closing the border, forcing folks to stay in Mexico while their asylum case is being decided. And then there's that wall.
That doesn't going to stop people from coming here. I mean, when people is desperate for a good life, they're going to do whatever they can to be safe and get a better life.
Today, Hector does have a better life. A year after Hector got asylum, he officially became a resident.
Everything changed.
He was no longer afraid to walk the streets, terrified of being deported. Today, he's still dealing with his illness, but he did receive a kidney transplant last year. I was curious to hear from someone close to Hector about his journey, someone that knows him really well. So I talked to Juan Rosas, Hector's best friend ever since Hector came to the United States.
Se enfermó, pero aquí está todavía.
He says Hector's been through so many difficult situations, but he has always proved that he's a fighter. Because of that, Juan compares Hector to a phoenix that arises from the ashes.
Como el ave fénix que surge de las cenizas y alcanza su vuelo.
Hector continues to thrive in the Bay Area's Latino LGBTQ community.
Allá le gusta, allá le gusta, allá le gusta, allá le gusta.
It's something magical. It's like my life.
He's been on judge panels for drag beauty pageants, and he has coordinated drag shows for years. He's also a singer himself, but he doesn't dress up like his drag friends. He's just Hector, with some extra glitter on.
I like to be really shiny, so, you know, I can see, like, people can see something different, not just like regular outfit.
Tonight, Hector is heading to the gay club OMG on 6th Street in downtown San Francisco. When he arrives, there's a drag queen lip-syncing on stage and collecting tips from her adoring fans. But Hector is here to sing himself. As he's standing in front of the mirror, he seems a little nervous.
So I can concentrate myself and I'm going to start like warming up a little bit.
You look good.
Thank you. Hopefully this is, like, it looks nice when I do this. Yeah. So I want this to shine when I'm singing.
Hector's close friend Violeta, with the purple wig, eyelash extensions, and big red lips, helps him out with his stage makeup.
A ver, ya. Ahora sí. Nada más lo que quiero es que se te vea, ya.
Rosita. Como mi culito.
O sea, te están grabando. Listo.
Thank you.
And then it's time. Hector looks at the speaker with a huge smile on his face as he's called to the stage.
Señoras y señores, él es Hector Romero y canta verdaderamente como Los Ángeles. Música.
It's clear the crowd loves him and that he loves being on stage too, especially during his last song.
Because ya lo pasado, pasado, it means the past is the past. It's like a song made for me because I've been through a lot and now I ask for applause, for love. It's like my life in a little song because I passed everything, really bad things, but now I feel love and I feel like I can just go on.
In San Francisco, I'm Sarah Noah Coast for Cross Currents.
Sarah Noah Coast is a former intern from Denmark who worked with us through the Council on International Educational Exchange. For more stories about immigration, go to kalw.org. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to get all these stories and interviews in your inbox every week. This music is by cellist Joshua McLean from Oakland. He's performing at a house concert on Chadbourne Way this Sunday afternoon. Today's Cross Currents team includes Taylor Caldwell, Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Ariella Markowitz, Kristen McCandless, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, M. Locke Swingin, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Tariq Foda. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.